Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. Today we have on the show with us Professor Dominique Helsmer, Dean of the College of Science and Engineering at Oral Roberts University. Dr. Helsmer earned his BS and MS degrees in aeronautical and astronautical engineering from Purdue University and his PhD in mechanical engineering from UCLA. We have him on the show with us today to talk about his recent paper in the International Journal of Design and Nature and Ecodynamics. The paper is titled The Coherence of an Engineered World, and Dr. Helsmer and his co-authors explicitly argue for an intelligently designed universe and biosphere in the paper. So, Dr. Helsmer, thank you for coming back on the show with us.
That's my pleasure, Casey.
Well, many of our listeners probably remember we recently had Dr. Helsmer on, telling his own personal story of how he got interested in science and became a skeptic of Darwinian evolution. And we wanted to have Dr. Helsmer back on the show to talk about this paper, The Coherence of an Engineered World, in International Journal of Design and Nature and Ecodynamics. And Dr. Helsmer, this is a peer-reviewed paper, I presume. Is that right?
That's correct.
So this is another one of those papers that is not supposed to exist, according to our critics, a peer-reviewed paper in a mainstream scientific journal that is actually arguing for intelligent design. So let's get into that paper and talk to Dr. Helsmer. Dr. Helsmer, what does it mean to say that we live in an engineered world?
Most people would agree that the natural world exhibits marvelous engineering, especially in terms of the machinery of life. And the way life has hung around for so long in a pretty harsh environment, to say that we live in an engineered world simply acknowledges the idea that the mere existence of superb engineering in natural systems and our ability to readily and profitably reverse engineer natural systems strongly suggests that such systems were engineered in the first place, and not just accidentally engineered, which I think is an oxymoron. I have yet to be shown how a complex system can be accidentally engineered. Even evolutionary-type computer algorithms that operate via mutation and natural selection have been engineered by the programmers to work towards some goal or purpose. So by definition, engineering implies purpose or a calculating intentionality at the root of that which has been engineered. To disregard this influence in natural systems, which is so prevalent throughout living systems, is to ignore one of the most prominent features, a feature that seems to cry out for explanation. And as human beings, we have a strong sense that there is an underlying purpose associated with our lives. That's why I think that from a scientific perspective, the idea that the world has been engineered or is still being engineered, in the process of being engineered, is the most coherent worldview. It appears to best reconcile the diverse data that's coming in from all fields of study. I suppose it's possible that in the future we may discover a mechanism for how complex systems might be accidentally engineered, but the more we learn about information theory, the more and more unlikely this seems. So when do we draw the line and say, well, like a perpetual motion machine, this kind of a process is just not possible without an outside force or influence like a mind? I think this is an interesting question, but at this point, an engineered world seems to make the most sense to me.
Dr. Helsmer, why do you feel that the universe is so biofriendly? And maybe in particular, could you explain to our listeners why the properties of water show that the universe is friendly to life?
The scientific term that is most commonly used to express this idea is fine-tuning. But I don't really like that term because it conjures up images of a technician making final adjustments to a complex piece of machinery to make it run right, mostly by trial and error. Or someone fiddling with the fine-tuning knob on the old television sets. You know, remember the old television sets used to have those fine-tuning knobs? In order to get the picture to be right. Now, neither one of those cases is really engineering. What we see in nature appears to be more like foresight and calculation of biofriendly values for the constants of physics, initial conditions, and even the very laws of nature that allow for the possibility of evolution. We see the right kind of elements and environments arising to support the development of life. For example, the early expansion rate of the universe appears to have been calculated specifically to allow for the biofriendly structure of our cosmos. The water is another curious example because everything about it seems to lend itself toward the engineering of life processes. It's a very simple molecule, but the way the two hydrogen atoms combine with the oxygen atom lead to some very interesting possibilities when it comes to life. But why do we have such orderly and reliable elements like hydrogen and oxygen in the first place? James Clerk Maxwell called atoms the manufactured article because they seemed to come straight off some kind of precise assembly line. Albert Einstein also puzzled over the order and comprehensibility of the universe, as opposed to it just being random and chaotic. But instead, we have an environment and resources that appear to be perfectly fit for the life as we know it. But let's get back to the water molecule. The remarkable properties of water are numerous. Its very high specific heat maintains relatively stable temperatures both in oceans and organisms. As a liquid, its thermal conductivity is four times that of any other common liquid, which allows cells to efficiently distribute heat. But ice has a very low thermal conductivity, making it a good thermal shield at high latitudes. A high vapor tension allows air to hold more moisture, which enables precipitation. Water's low viscosity makes it possible for blood to flow through small capillaries. Water expands into the solid state, which keeps ice on the ocean surface instead of accumulating on the ocean floor. It has unrivaled abilities as a solvent, which allows it to transport great amounts of minerals and hold all the contents of blood. It is only mildly reactive, which keeps it from harmfully reacting as it dissolves other substances. Michael Denton discusses much of this in his book, Nature's Destiny. But more recently, it's been discovered that water also works as an efficient lubricant in biological systems, especially as it combines with certain glycoproteins. Cosmologist Paul Davies recently wrote about this situation in an extensive volume entitled Fitness of the Cosmos for Life. He said, and I quote, "It happens that water combines in one substance several key qualities, thermal, mechanical, and chemical, that life exploits and indeed that are indispensable to life as we know it. What are we to make of this? Is it just a lucky fluke that the same stuff that has anomalous expansion property when it freezes, enabling ice to float, also has superlative solvent properties, or unusually high surface tension, and or efficient tectonic lubrication qualities, for example?" End quote. Satisfying all these criteria with one simple molecule is really an engineering marvel.
Dr. Hausmer, that really is amazing. A lot of people have also talked about the fact that the elements that we need for life are very prevalent in the universe and in our solar system, and how this is sort of an argument for fine-tuning. So why is it that the elements that are most common in life, you know, we're talking about hydrogen, carbon, oxygen, and so forth, why are they so prevalent in the universe?
Well, this is simply a consequence of how the chemical elements are produced in the interior of stars. Early reactions start with hydrogen atoms and produce deuterium of mass 2, tritium of mass 3, and alpha particles of mass 4, but no stable mass 5 exists. This necessitates bigger jumps of 4, which lead to carbon of mass 12 and oxygen of mass 16. And the reason beryllium of mass 8 is not more prevalent is because it reacts so readily with helium to create carbon. Stability is an important feature here. And it's also an important feature in humanly engineered systems. Energy resonance levels are the major determinant of stability. Resonance here refers to how beryllium and helium have a combined energy almost exactly equal to an excited carbon atom. Cosmologist Fred Hoyle actually predicted carbon's resonance level based on the anthropic assumption that it was necessary in large quantities for life. He was later proven correct. If the resonance level of carbon was 4% lower, essentially no carbon would form. If it was 0.5% higher, almost all carbon would react and become oxygen. As things have turned out, we have abundant quantities of hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen, and a few other elements that can easily bond together and break apart to facilitate life processes. These are what I call the Legos of life. Did you ever play with Legos when you were a kid?
Oh yeah, I was a huge fan.
I was too. Just think about it. Lego blocks are engineered and machined to exacting standards to produce the perfect interference fit so that they stick together when you want, but they can still be pulled apart to build something else. This is the same beautiful functionality that we see in the elements and molecules of life. So why should we conclude that it happened by accident instead of on purpose?
Your paper, Dr. Hausmer, mentions some other examples of fine-tuning arguments that show the universe is designed for life. What are some of the examples that you list, and why do you find those examples to be compelling?
Well, I wouldn't say that they show that the universe is designed for life. I would say that they strongly suggest the existence of an engineering influence of some kind that's behind the development of life. Fine-tuning has been written about quite a bit. As I mentioned earlier, the expansion rate of the universe, the ratio of gravity to the electromagnetic force, the ratio of electron mass to proton mass, the values of the physical constants, etc. I suppose I find the fine-tuning argument compelling because, as an engineer, I know how difficult it is to successfully engineer a complex system, and especially to make it beautiful in the process. Yet this is what we see in nature. Complex structures that are functional and stable and beautiful. If that happens accidentally without any need for intelligent input of any kind, then why did I spend all those years studying engineering?
You also cite a concept that was co-developed by Guillermo Gonzalez called the Galactic Habitable Zone, and I think we've talked about that here on the ID the Future podcast in the past, and you cite it as another example of fine-tuning. Can you explain that argument to us and why that's an argument for fine-tuning?
It basically says that our solar system resides in a location of the Milky Way galaxy which is both conducive to life and also allows for discovery of the larger structure of our universe. Neither of these features is likely, since most locations are dangerous for life or have a blocked field of view. Now, it could be argued that this is not surprising, since we wouldn't expect life to show up in any other location but in a habitable zone. And that's true, but it doesn't help to answer the question of why such a complex yet stable and functional system such as life would arise in the first place. And when you begin to look at all the conditions and parameters and natural laws that must be just right for life to exist, it really makes you wonder why there would be life anywhere in the universe. This is a cumulative type of argument, that is, the fine-tuning argument, in that any particular example of fine-tuning may not be that compelling, but when you consider all of them together, it becomes a significant piece of evidence for an engineered world.
Well, Dr. Halsmer, we're running short on time for this first podcast, so I want to ask you one last question that deals with the fine-tuning argument, and this is sort of a fun one that I think many of our listeners are familiar with. What about the old objection that goes like this, that there might be a multitude of universes, the multiverse, which would increase the odds that a universe like ours would hold these unlikely properties necessary for life? Do you find that objection persuasive, and why or why not?
To the extent that we have evidence for multiple universes, I'm open to this possibility. I recently heard a talk by Neil deGrasse Tyson, a cosmologist who's on PBS sometimes. He points out that for a long time, humans mistakenly thought that Earth was the only planet. Then we mistakenly thought that there was only one solar system, our solar system. Then we mistakenly thought that the Milky Way was the only galaxy. Then we discovered there's billions of galaxies. So he cautions us about making the same mistake with the universe. I agree that we shouldn't rule it out, but I'd like to see some significant evidence. It almost appears as though a vast number of multiple universes are hypothesized in order to help resolve the fine-tuning problem, in which case I don't find the multiverse very compelling. It just leads one to wonder, you know, what caused the multiverse. On the other hand, if there are these other worlds or extra dimensions out there, that would make room for a transcendent engineer who might be using our universe as a kind of design tool. Engineers typically work things out in two dimensions before developing a three-dimensional prototype. Perhaps the four space-time dimensions of this universe serve as a kind of drawing board, and we are being engineered or worked out in this fewer dimensional space with the potential to be implemented in a larger space or universe at the right time, a place that's traditionally been called heaven. I realize that I'm straying from science into metaphysics here, but thinking about the philosophical implications of science is part of what makes it such an exciting field to me.
Well, thank you, Dr. Halsmer, for talking to us about your paper in the International Journal of Design and Nature and Ecodynamics. Again, it's titled The Coherence of an Engineered World. We're going to come back with more with Dr. Dominique Halsmer on his paper, The Coherence of an Engineered World. I'm Casey Luskin. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.